In our iFaith video sermon series, we're about to get into the wisdom literature. And the first two sermons are on Job, and I've entitled them Job, Faith in Crisis. Now, in these two messages, we will read only a small part of the book because Job is rich and lengthy. I've prepared a lot for this. Five different books I've gone through in rereading and rethinking Job, and I feel like I had underestimated this amazing book. I learned a lot. Obviously, I can only share parts. So it's going to be a two-part message. We'll do about half of it today, and then for the next message, we'll do the other part. Faith in crisis. Well, wisdom comes from wise people. And in the biblical tradition, there are groups of scribes, of scholars, of people called wise men. In Proverbs, we read of the sayings of the wise. We find not only men, we also find wise women. If you look carefully through the Bible, they're there also. These scribes, these scholars were literate. They could read and write. Maybe the average Jewish person read and wrote less than the scribal class. But these scribes were totally literate, and they preserved wisdom. Their goal was to understand how the world works, to identify the principles that make for right living and for a good life. Of course, wisdom takes time. You don't normally, if you want wisdom, look for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old, although they may have some wisdom that we don't have. It takes time. And of course, not everyone who is older is necessarily wise. Wisdom and age do not always go together. Sometimes age comes alone. Well, so wisdom is discerning the principles of the universe. The standard approach is a cause and effect approach. It is retribution. One thing is paid for another. You reap what you sow. And of course, that is biblical. That makes sense. But the standard wisdom philosophy tends to be mechanical. It doesn't make much room for exceptions. And then the other approach, the non-standard approach, challenges or at least raises questions about that standard view. And we see that kind of approach in Job and in Ecclesiastes, whereas Proverbs is more mainstream wisdom. Now, you'll find wisdom also in the Psalms. Some of the Psalms are wisdom Psalms, like 1, 37, 49, quite a few others. We find it in the New Testament. But the three major wisdom books are Job, Ecclesiastes, and Proverbs. We will include Song of Solomon, though. Now, in Job, as you'll see, there's a sense that God, at least among Job's friends, they thought that God monitored and controlled everything, that he was so present that you would always know where you stood because good things happen to you or bad things happen to you, and it's what you deserve. So in Job, God is so close. In Ecclesiastes, it's almost the opposite. God is so distant. Yes, he's majestic, he's transcendent, he's above the heavens, but you almost get the feeling that, well, does he even care about us? So we have a great distance in Ecclesiastes, and we've got presence or nearness in Job, and we'll compare those two books later on in this unit, much more as we continue through the wisdom literature. Now, I want to focus, of course, on Job. In the ancient world, in the area where Israel is, there were multiple Jobs. In Sumeria, for example, this is Mesopotamia, there was a Job who went through catastrophic loss. He lost everything. But eventually he confesses his sin because he deserved whatever happened to him, and he reaffirms traditional wisdom. He admits that this is the way the gods have set things up. You get what you deserve. In Babylon, there's a story. There's a Babylonian Job, and he, of course, also loses everything. And finally, he appeals to Marduk. Marduk became the king of the gods in Babylon. And Marduk answers the Babylonian Job. He sends an exorcist The exorcist drives out a demon, and then everything starts going well again. In Canaan, the promised land, there's a Job who loses his family, and eventually he gets a new wife and new children. Egypt has a similar story. It's a dialogue on suicide, or it's often called a debate of a man with his soul. It's the man is talking to his own soul, trying to figure out what is the meaning of life. So this kind of wisdom, speculative wisdom, standard wisdom, it's present everywhere in the ancient world and in the ancient Near East. Now, of course, for Israel, Job is the primary example, and he's well known in the Old Testament. For example, Ezekiel 14:14 refers to him and his righteousness. He's mentioned in the New Testament in James. But the Hebrew Job, the Job of the Old Testament, is much more interesting and layered, textured, nuanced, much more interesting than the pagan stories. The issue is not this. It's not, do innocent people suffer? You know, because the standard answer would be, well, no, if you suffer, it's because of sin. But that's not what Job's talking about. The issue is not, why do the innocent suffer? No. It's, how should the innocent respond when they suffer inexplicably? No explanation, undeservedly. They didn't deserve it. They're good guys. Now, the book of Job is very interesting. I'm still amazed. Many Christians think it's just an account of something that happened to a man named Job. It's much more interesting than that. It's a drama. It's a play. You know, most of it's poetry. But the very beginning, the very end are not poetry. The play is in the balcony. So it's like there's a balcony and then there's the stage. And the balcony up there, that's where God speaks to the sons of God, these angels, which include the accuser, the bad guy. And at the very end, God speaks from the balcony again. But most of the action is taking place on the main level, on the stage. But it's very much a drama. It's also a debate. Job and his friends have similar theology. They have a similar view on bad things happening to bad people and so forth. But the difference is Job says, I'm innocent. And his friends say, you must not be innocent. But it's a debate. It's also a lawsuit. Job is bringing a lawsuit against God, against Yahweh. Now, at the end, when God speaks out of a storm, when God speaks from heaven, then Job, he withdraws the suit. He says, okay, I'm not prosecuting, I give up. But it's a drama, a debate, a lawsuit. Narrative, like a story, well, not that much. Most of Job is poetry. And in this way, it's more like a parable. It's a great vehicle for conveying truth. The story isn't necessarily true to life or historical, but God uses this amazing story to teach us some truths we need to know. Now, Job is the righteous man. He's blameless. We read, in the land of Uz, there was a blameless and upright man named Job, feared God, avoided evil. 7 sons and 3 daughters are born to him. That's like the perfect family. 7 and 3. He has 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-donkeys, a very large household, so that he was greater than anyone in the East. His sons used to take turns giving feasts, sending invitations to their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when each feast had run its course, Job would send for them and sanctify them, rising early and offering sacrifices for every one of them. For Job said, it may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. So, perfect family, righteous guy, rich like Abraham. And in this time, wealth is not measured in coins and money. It's in livestock. It's in animals. He's like Abraham. And he's not just a good father. He goes the extra mile. He offers sacrifice just in case his children have sinned. Now, the Satan, the accuser, comes to the Lord and asks, is it for nothing that Job is God-fearing? Haven't you surrounded him and his family and all that he has with your protection? So Satan is saying that with Job, of course he's God-fearing. Of course he's a good guy. Look at him. He's got the perfect life. And this, of course, raises an important question about you and me. If things are going well in our life, is that the large part of the reason why we think we're faithful Christians? What would happen if all those blessings, all that protection was removed? Well, of course, there's a total loss in Job's case. It comes in 2 phases. First, it's on a feast day. And you'll read the story. I wish I had time to read the whole thing. But a messenger comes, and basically he's lost all of his donkeys and oxen because foreigners have come from the desert, and they've taken everything away. These are Bedouin. And I alone have escaped to tell you. And then the very next messenger comes before the first one is finished. And here it's like lightning has come down and just killed the sheep and the servants. And next it's the Chaldeans, like the Babylonians. They've taken all the camels away. And then while he's still speaking, then there's a terrible storm, a wind, a sirocco, and his sons and daughters have all been killed. Now, all these things would not be happening simultaneously. I mean, invaders from the desert and the Babylonians and a wind and everything. It's dramatic. It's actually melodramatic. Normally, when there is a series of hard events, it takes place not so quickly. Back in 2003, I went through a lot as our own church family was disintegrating. I lost my job. I lost my father and more. But these were things that were all expected. I had a friend who in 2001 lost one parent, lost another parent. She lost her sister who was killed in 9/11 at the Pentagon. She lost her job. She lost her dog. And none of these was expected. And it seemed so close in time, it combined to make it very hard, very challenging with faith. And to make it worse, all the disasters in Job's life take place on the feast day. This is the day that Job had been preparing for by making extra sacrifices. Now, his response is amazing. Job arose, tore his cloak, cut off his hair, fell to the ground, worshipped, and he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb. Naked I shall go back there. The Lord gave, the Lord's taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin, nor did he charge God with wrong. So that's phase one. Now in phase two, Satan comes back to God and says pretty much the same thing. God gives him permission to afflict Job with painful sores, to challenge his health, to take away his health. And now Job is sitting outside the town. He's scraping himself, sitting in the ashes. And his wife says, "Are you still holding to your innocence? Curse God and die." And Job won't do it. You know, should we accept good things from God and not evil? And through all this, Job did not sin in what he said. Now, let's talk about Job's response here. What does Job not do? He doesn't curse God. He doesn't do what his wife is suggesting right there. He doesn't suppress his feelings. No, he's expressing. He doesn't cut himself, make himself bleed, which was common in that time. He's not in self-pity. He's not considering suicide. He's not denying reality, like that didn't happen, this couldn't have happened. He's not blaming himself, but instead he's affirming God is sovereign. God has the right to do what he chooses to do. God is good, not evil. God is just. What God does is fair. And Job not only affirms God, but he interacts with others, even though he doesn't agree with them. And he calls them worthless physicians, worthless doctors, miserable comforters. But what he does is he has a balanced and spiritual perspective. Listen, he doesn't say, "Well, the Sabaeans, now Chaldeans and the wind, the lightning, they've taken away everything." No. He doesn't say, "Oh, the Lord has taken away." That would be too much focus on the negative. He doesn't say, "Well, the Lord has given," because that would be really rejecting reality, because there was a give and a take. He doesn't even say the Lord is given and the Lord takes away. He says the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. So he remains steadfast, although his faith is in crisis. And we should remember this, because one day we too may find that our faith is in crisis. We're not done. We're just in the middle of this message. Next time, we're going to look at Job's friends. Why what they say is so wrong and dangerous, very dangerous. We'll look at the differences among his advisors, because just as today, back then, there were multiple wrong positions, multiple wrong perspectives. We'll see God's response, what God says, what God doesn't say, and what God brings about, what he does. And then in the conclusion, we'll have practical steps for us. I hope you're looking forward to part two of Job, of Faith in Crisis. Thank you for listening to this iFaith message.